I'm going to start this morning with a pop quiz. I know, it hardly seems fair. You've tried, if you were coming from the north, you had to make it across the Solano Stroll somehow, and some mornings it's just hard enough to get up, get dressed, get breakfast, and show up to church. And so you've done all that, and now preacher's got a pop quiz. It is not fair, but here it goes. The passage you just heard, how many Gospels does that passage, does that teaching appear in? How many Gospels would you hear that in? One. That is exactly right. One. Only this Gospel, the Gospel according to Matthew. For those of you who have been reading, praying through this gospel in this year that we've been in it, this has been a constant theme. How to negotiate conflict and community. Now, there are some scholars who say, oh, was this really a Jesus saying? Is this just part of the Matthean community? A community that apparently had a profound rift and was learning how to live with it? Well, that could be the case, but in any case, there is great wisdom in this teaching. And I find it something that for us as Christians now, particularly now, it's important to listen to take in. Because this may be just from this one gospel, but it speaks to what it means to be human. Now, as you may know, I try and pay close attention to the words of Jesus. And I pay close attention when I remember to what Jesus does not say. And I find that to be a helpful lens with teachings like this. Because Jesus does not assume that we will be living a life without conflict. This is not a teaching of, hey, at some point in your life, if you happen to come into conflict, here's a way to deal with it. No, this is when your brother or sister sins against you, try this. And I think it's important to actually put in brother or sister. In our NRSV text, it says when a member of the church, which is fine, but it's actually not the Greek. The Greek is brother, which we want to expand absolutely, but we don't want to lose the sense of family. When someone so close to you as to be family sins against you, try this. So, what does Jesus not say? Well, when you come into conflict, Jesus does not say, just avoid that person. Go to the other side of the street or the other side of the country. Jesus does not say, let's never speak of this again. Jesus does not say, go ahead, hurt them in return. And I understand that these ways of dealing with conflict, they are familiar. You may have come across them in the wider culture. For us in the United States of America, there seems to be a particular strain. It's not unique to us, but there seems to be a particular strain of dealing with conflict that treats it as a zero-sum game. As if the only way to know how to deal with conflict is to have a winner and a loser, and the way you know if you're the winner is if you're the one left standing. And this permeates through our wider culture, into our families of origin, into our workplaces, and into ourselves. And if Jesus is not saying, if conflict happens, but when it happens, then we have a choice to make. And the ways of avoidance, the ways of striking back, they often simply serve to lead us down a steep and stony path. You may have heard or seen this past week that Pope Francis is in Colombia. Now, I actually wonder if a pretty outstanding sermon series could be just following Pope Francis around the globe and seeing what he encounters. In this particular case, he is in Colombia because, as you may know, there has been tremendous sustained violence for over 50 years. And there is now, they are on the precipice of reconciliation. And so Pope Francis is there so that he might listen, encourage, witness, and pray. And he's there because this last year, the government negotiated a truce with the FARC, which was one of the main guerrilla groups. And they took it to the country in a referendum, and it was narrowly defeated. The reason for this is fairly well known. This struggle has been horrific. In the last 50 or so years, since 1964, so 53 years, can you imagine this kind of sustained violence for 53 years? Over 220,000 Colombians have died. Over 6 million people have sought refuge because of the violence. And so after that referendum failed, the government and the FARC renegotiated, and this time brought the agreement to the legislature where it passed. And now the really hard work begins of how Colombians who have experienced such pain from one another find a way to live together. And so at one of these public ceremonies, four people offered testimonials about their experience and what they hoped to see. And they were powerful. The last of them, the final testimony, was offered by a woman named Pastora Mira Garcia. And it was the one that caught my heart. She talked about her father being killed by guerrillas when she was 6 years old. And then later in her life, the death of her husband, her daughter, and her son by the violence that was racking her country. It was the death of her son that was most profound. She spoke about 3 days after, she spoke about what happened. It happened 3 days after her son's funeral when she took in an injured paramilitary fighter. And the only room, the only bed she had in her home was her son's. And so she laid the paramilitary fighter there and she began to care for him. And he looked up on the wall where there was a photo of her son. And he realized that he himself had killed her son in fighting earlier that week. And because of her care, he felt compelled to confess what he had done and how her son had died. And it was here, in her testimony to all those gathered this past week in Colombia, that Pastora Mira Garcia said that she gave thanks to God, and in her words, to the little Mother Mary, because they gave her the strength to care for this man and to not harm him in spite of her pain. This is often the road to restoration. The courage to bring our pain to bear, to share it with those who have caused it, so that it might be transformed. For me, an old wound recently resurfaced. It was something from decades ago, and it's kind of like when you have a bruise that you've forgotten about, and then you bump into it, and immediately you feel the pain. You go, "Oh yeah, there it is." For me, it was an emotional dislocation. And I came up against it recently when I was parenting one of my own kids. Having kids is really good at this. At surfacing all the wounds that are still present. And so it happened, and I felt that old familiar ache. It was a hurt that my dad had caused me many years ago. And so I faced this choice of whether to continue to carry it as it was or not. And something about it this time felt different. And so I took a deep breath. And what felt like a huge risk. And I called my dad. And I told him about this pain, this hurt that I've been carrying with me for decades. He had no idea. He remembered what took place, but had no idea the pain that it had caused me. And he said he was sorry. And I forgave him. And then I told him about the kind of father that I'm trying to be. And we talked. And I don't feel the pain, the hurt that I did, at least not in that way. Friends, we all have people that we have left behind, people that have left us behind. They may be still here with us, or they may not be. But this road to restoration that Jesus lays out in this teaching, it's not about shame or punishment. It's not about preventing the loss of people so much as it is about keeping people and being kept with people. It's about moving towards each other rather than away from each other. As the biblical scholar Jin Kim teaches, we are free not from each other, but we are free in and through each other. And we wonder, what will this person say? Will they even care? For often we've carried this pain for so long. Choose this path, friends. It demands all of us. It will require courage. It needs community. But when we take this path full of heart, it changes lives. It changes families. It changes the world. Slowly and surely, life changes.